Today is May 6th, 2014. This is the third and final interview with Lori Steckervetz. We are here inside Memorial Library. My name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. And we've been primarily interviewing Lori to get her stories and memories about, to help us with our Madison LGBTQ Oral History Project. So Lori, when we talked, I think we have three, maybe four, sort of final topics. The one I'm interested in the most is the SLIS LGBTQ group. So I wonder if you'd start with that, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So it started my first year at SLIS. A fellow classmate of mine, Carrie Wolfson, approached me about the idea of starting an LGBTQ-focused student organization at SLIS. And at first, honestly, I really couldn't really imagine what we would do. It wasn't really on my radar in terms of professional interest. I have a science background, and I was interested in that career trajectory of science librarianship, and I didn't see at first, I mean, interestingly enough, as a LGBTQ identified individual, I at first just couldn't actually envision what would we do as a student org. When I thought about student orgs on campus that had that focus, I thought of groups like the 10% Society or working at the LGBT Campus Center, and all those made sense to me as far as being support services. But we got to talking about it, and as I started kind of delving more into library school and realizing that what we were, what she was really thinking of, and what started making sense to me was seeing that this was a looking at LGBTQ people as a population of patrons that may have different needs that students at SLIS may not be aware of. We started having conversations about things like cataloging and how the Library of Congress system may not work very well to describe materials that talk about LGBTQ people. And those were kind of where we started seeing, oh, there is the possibility of us being able to do something, and maybe it would be worth our time and energy in trying to do something and see where that goes. So in the spring of 2012, we became a little bit more formal. There was maybe four or five of us that started off, and we spent most of that semester just brainstorming ideas. I'm trying to remember if we actually held an event. I think we held, yes, we did. We were able to get, I believe her name is Lynn Everts. She's a school librarian in Sauk City. And she, many years ago, I believe that she was fairly instrumental in helping to form the Rainbow Book Selection Committee through ALA. And so she's ended up having a lot of years of thinking about collecting LGBT-focused books for youth. And she came and spoke to us. We were able to get the Commons to have basically a nice lecture with her, and she brought examples, and it was really well attended. So that was like very encouraging of like, oh, okay, there seems to be interest here from SLIS students. We should maybe keep doing this. So that's basically how it started.
Okay. And then, so it's been going, this will be the end of its third academic year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ish, yeah.
Right. And as somebody who's graduating and moving on, do you feel confident that there are enough that it's bloomed enough, so to speak, that it might continue?
Yes and no. I think that the interesting thing has been, we've put on a number of talks and have managed to do one allyship training. Everything that we have put on has been very well attended. So the interesting thing is there's been just, since its inception, there's always just been this group of people running the show. We've tried having open meetings. If we do an open meeting, no one comes. But if we do an event, lots of people come. So I think that there's interest and support from SLIS students. I know that generally speaking, SLIS students tend to be overcommitted in all sorts of things, student orgs, working, you know, more than one, probably often three or four jobs, and not to mention classwork. So I get that it's difficult to shoulder another responsibility. But right now, it's kind of iffy on whether or not we'll be able to secure leadership. Mm-hmm. I also think another problem, and I unfortunately don't know enough first years to be able to address this directly. So I'm trying to figure out ways that I can kind of filter this information to potential interested parties, is that I worry that there might be a misconception that you need to be LGBTQ identified in order to be part of the leadership, and that's absolutely not the case. It has way more to do with if you're interested in, you know, this particular topic, if you have interest in diversity in librarianship in general. I think that's really all you need, and if you're, you know, able to do some organizing and whatnot.
Okay, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
As with many small groups that start off, it sounds like there just needs to be a core group of people,
yeah,
that continue to take the lead.
Yes.
And in a situation like this where you may only be around 2-3 years,
mm-hmm,
it can be difficult to find that next.
Absolutely. And this isn't unusual. I know that other student orgs have gone through their waxing and waning of being, and some of them have blinked out of existence maybe altogether, and I hope that's not the case for us. At least I see that there's interest, so I think it's just a matter of getting the right people to be able to carry on.
Mm-hmm. So Lori, I don't think we've ever talked about this directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next question is, your thoughts now that you've been in Wisconsin for a good chunk of years of the state, the state's attitude or feelings towards LGBTQ folks?
That's an interesting question. So when I first moved here, which was 15 years ago in 1999, I was leaving what at the time was a more conservative area in Pennsylvania. And at least moving to Madison and not really knowing anything about the rest of the state, it was like a breath of fresh air. I may have talked about this in other parts of the interview of, in Lancaster, I would not feel comfortable like holding my girlfriend's hand walking in the mall. And here, I didn't even think twice about it. In Lancaster, there were times I was not out at wherever I worked. And here, I've always been out. So at least initially, living in Madison and kind of having that bubble that Madison sometimes can be thought of, the climate felt very much more open. And if not affirming, at least it was kind of no big thing, is kind of really the message I got in a lot of ways. But, you know, I recognize the fact that Wisconsin is much more complex than that, and it's a lot more like Pennsylvania in the sense that it's, you know, it depends on where you are in the state. I mean, there were definitely times when I've traveled to more, or I've lived because of work reasons, in slightly more conservative areas where I could feel kind of the pressure to feel a little bit more, maybe not in the closet, but a little more playing my cards closer to my chest kind of thing. But generally speaking, I don't know. The climate here is confusing. I was absolutely shocked when the constitutional amendment actually passed. I knew it was going to be close, but I didn't think it would actually pass. And the sad truth of it is that while I think that the overarching political or winds in the state have always leaned towards being more open and more progressive, and I do think at some point it'll get overturned, but it definitely has colored my long-term thoughts about being in this state. I can't say that it hasn't. It definitely has. Though the interesting thing is that when I've not had this experience absolutely directly, but I've talked to enough people whose like families are from Wisconsin and they may be more conservative. And it seems like people may have a lot of regret over that passing. I don't know. I can't really, you know, speak for all the state of Wisconsin, but I just get the sense that there seems to be this kind of like, oh, well, maybe that wasn't a good idea. So, I mean, I'm very hopeful about the climate here in Wisconsin. And I think that this was the first state to pass like a work non-discrimination law. So I feel like that has still always set the tone. But, you know, being in Madison and generally speaking, most places in the state, I feel very safe. I think generally speaking, on a one-to-one level, interacting with people, even people who may be very conservative, I feel like overall the climate here is pretty positive.
I'm guessing it might not matter to you. I mean, I'm guessing it does matter to you. You're graduating, you're looking for jobs. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you need a job.
Yes.
but I'm wondering how much where you might be moving and their attitudes towards LGBTQ folks color your job search.
It does.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, it does. I don't know if it's a deal breaker, but it gets factored in for sure. My partner and I don't have any legal, we're not domestic partners. We, at this point, don't even, I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, grad school and whatnot, we haven't even set up any sort of legal protections for each other. And the idea of being able to move to a state where we could just simply get married and have all that taken care of is, you know, that's a big draw. It definitely factors in. And, you know, we think we might want to maybe have kids, and I don't. And for me, children, that would then become the deal breaker about whether or not we would live in a state or take a job in a state that would not recognize the legality of our relationship. If we would have children, that would take precedence. So yeah, I mean, I look at jobs and I look at where they are, and one of the things that gets factored in is, oh, we can get married there. Great.
Okay. I'm just writing a note down here. So maybe to back up just briefly, I mean,
sure.
You are... Neither of us are a person of color. We're both quite white. I'm wondering if you know or if you have any thoughts on how LGBTQ people of color are treated here, either in primarily Madison, since that's, you know, where you are.
My sense is race and color trump your LGBTQ identification. But that the people I have been able to have conversations with, I get the sense that they feel the most invisible, because they, at least in conversations I've had, I've gotten a sense of hearing that a queer person of color is invisible in their own community and double, and then also invisible within, especially in Madison. I think that there's, this is like a whole other topic, but I think that Madison doesn't have a very good handle on race and issues around race in general. So I think that people who are people of color and also happen to be LGBTQ are definitely highly feel very marginalized.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, two more things.
Mm-hmm.
The first, before we turn this on, talked about you went to Wall, and I know from your resume that you've gone to Wall before.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a graduate student, why do you feel it's important to go to these conferences?
For a couple of reasons. I feel like it's an important part of, like, the kind of socialization or indoctrination into the profession. We know that conferences just in general, as being part of being a professional librarian, is an expectation and a way that you get to interact with your colleagues, especially colleagues from other places. So getting yourself out of your silo of your institution or whatever the case. As a student, beyond just kind of seeing what that environment is like, it's kind of a, I feel like a really low risk way of pushing yourself, in the sense that, okay, for example, my first year going to Wall, which I guess we should say what that is.
It's please.
I always confuse the letters around. The Wisconsin Association of Academic Librarians. There we go. And it's part of the larger Wisconsin Library Association. My first year going, so I was able to present a poster with my coworker from the Center for Limnology, and I had no idea what I was doing. Like, she basically did the whole poster. I just stood there. I talked to some people, but it was a really great way to just see, oh, this is how this thing works, and this is what networking is, and whatnot. And the nice thing about going, I've been able to go every year, and I've been in school for 3 years, so I've gone 3 times. And every year, I'm a little more plugged in. I know I know more people, and I'm able to make connections, not just for myself, but this year it was really fun because I went with some first year students, and I kind of was like, oh, I remember what it was like when I was in your shoes. Here, let me help facilitate some networking so that you can meet some people. And I got to present this time, which again was just a really great experience. It, you know, it helps me get prepared for things like job talks when I interview. Mm-hmm. And it was, in a lot of ways, fairly low risk because it was a very, you know, the audience there is very, I think, low key and laid back, and they're there to get information from you. So they're extremely excited to hear you present. So it's just, I think the things that you can get out of it as a student are really, really important to your professional development.
What did you present on this year?
I presented on the practicum I did this semester. I've been working with Susan Mitchell in the Wisconsin System Administration Offices. I think Office of Learning and Information Technology is the office name. And I spent the whole semester developing a library space assessment rubric, looking at how do physical spaces in academic libraries support student learning and engagement. And EDUCOST came up with this big rating system that's 60 pages long and really hard to use, and I tried to distill it down to something that was like 6 pages and easier to use. So that's what I presented on.
Okay. So it reminds me, I'm not sure we've talked about, it's in your resume where you have worked on campus.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if maybe just overall you could talk about the importance of not only going to class, but being able to have experience within academic libraries while at SLIS.
Absolutely. I was really fortunate. I've worked in two libraries on campus. The Center for Limnology has a really small in-house library where I worked for 2 years. And then I worked for 2 years at College Library as a reference assistant. And I mean, classes are important. I'm not going to say that they're not. I think that you need to have that background in theory to support and provide framework for why libraries may make decisions that they do. But I can even say, just from the handful of interviews that I've been lucky enough to have, I can already tell that everything I talk about in my interview is somehow or another grounded in a time when I did this in my position. Mm-hmm. So that's what employers are looking for. They want you to have real world experience. And so every opportunity that I had to get hands-on experience, and even beyond working on campus in terms of actual paying positions, all of my courses I selected primarily for what could I get on my resume as a result of taking this class.
So by that you mean, does the class give me an opportunity to have a component that gets me out of the classroom?
Well, either that, or I am going to do a thing. I'm going to work on building a website. I'm going to have a product at the end of this. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, and sometimes a product can be something like a research paper, but I was really looking to go beyond that. I wanted a place where I demonstrated a set of skills. I built a database, I built a website, I developed a collection management plan, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is indeed invaluable. I know you said you've already sort of figured this out, but people who hire you are going to want you to be able to tell them that you've done stuff.
Yes.
The degree obviously gets you in the door.
Yes.
It's what gets the checkbox.
Yes.
But the questions aren't going to be primarily about the classes you take.
No.
It's going to be what you gained or what you were able to do with those classes.
Yeah. To the point where I even noticed in interviews that where I had an example based on something that I did in a library versus, and I could easily have given an example of something I did in class, I always talked about the thing I did in a library or on the job instead of the class thing.
Yep. Okay, so, and I think we've somewhat alluded to this in what we just talked about, but I want to ask it directly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we mentioned early on that you are graduating.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually are graduating next week.
Yes.
The end of next week. Come hell or high water.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes.
So now that you're basically a week away,
mm-hmm.
and you said yourself before we turn this on, you have a few things to do, but they'll get done.
They'll get done.
How do you feel your time here in the program is going to help you as you now go out and try to become a full-time paid librarian?
I think that my time in terms of several things. What I just talked about in terms of acquiring as many practical skills as possible. And I did that through classwork as much as I did through work experience. Again, that was a lot of self-selection, I guess you could say, on my part of looking at classes and reading through syllabi and saying, okay, this class, by the end of this class, I will know how to do this or this. And that meant sometimes not taking the classes that sounded really interesting, but were maybe more theory-based. And I just didn't feel like I could walk out saying that I could do something. And not that there's anything wrong with that. I think that theory classes are important. But I have a bachelor's degree that's heavily based on theory, and I walked out of that without a lot of practical skills, and I kind of learned that lesson the hard way. So that was my main motivation. But the other things I got from 3 years at SLIS have definitely been the opportunity to interact, especially through student orgs, to network, to develop this network of individuals that I know that throughout my professional career, I know I'll stay in touch with them. I know that we'll perhaps be able to offer support in some fashion or another to each other's careers in some way. And I think that that's really valuable. So, yeah.
Do you think... I guess I'll put it this way. I mean, my graduate school experience, it wasn't SLIS. It was a history graduate
mm-hmm.
degree.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do anything like what you just said you did.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, why did you? I mean, why did, instead of, I just took classes. I mean, you did some recon.
Yeah. I think it might be a combination of, like I mentioned, my bachelor's degree. I had fun during my bachelor's degree. It was a bachelor's in wildlife ecology. I got to go out, play in nature, as it were, and have a lot of fun. And I acquired some skills, for sure, but a lot of it was very theory-based. And when it came to talking to a potential employer about, oh, did I know how to use GIS software? At the time, no. Did I know how to do this or this? No, I had no idea. And I realized that while I really had a lot of fun, and I could speak to theories of ecosystem management or whatever the case may be, the practical application of those theories is where I was lacking. And I suffered for it. I had a hard time finding a job. I actually had to come back here and take some classes in GIS software so that I could have a set of hard skills to go to an employer with. So I had that lesson, but I also had about 7 years or so of professional experience between finishing my undergrad and starting graduate school. And I had realized, being a non-traditional student finishing up my undergraduate degree, so I was already older, and then coming back, I realized my education is my responsibility. I mean, I have an advisor and whatnot, and she's great, but ultimately, it's my responsibility. And so I knew I needed to take ownership of that. And, you know, it's not cheap either. So I wanted to get the most bang for my buck, as it were. So that meant making those types of choices. And I do think that, just in casual observation of my younger classmates, that I definitely had an advantage of having that experience and being able to be more critical of the path that I decided to take, rather than just being like, oh, this sounds interesting, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, there's nothing in theory wrong with that, but I was always thinking about the outcome.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to talk about? I mean, there's no sort of easy way for me to ask you about... you know, being a lesbian for the last 15 years in Madison, and with that, you know, there's sort of no easy way to tie that in a bow. It's easy to tie education
yeah.
because there's a degree.
I think, well, if I think about that, it's interesting. I'm kind of coming full circle right now through 15 years. I left Pennsylvania at a time when I was very confused about myself, and I mean, not about my like identity, but just confused about how I could navigate the world as a gay person and feel safe, feel like I could have a whole life, not feel like there were things that I would have barriers to. And moving to Madison had a lot to do with finding myself and finding my own strength and proving to myself that not only could I leave the shelter of my hometown and everything I had ever known and just strike out and make it on my own, especially because I moved here without a job. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I really just kind of came here with just the, you know, essentially just my belongings and thought, well, I'm just going to do it. And, you know, I grew up here in a sense. I became an adult here. I figured out who I was and my place in the world and how I can navigate the world. And now I'm looking at jobs and it's highly likely that my partner and I will be moving back east. And perhaps, if not in Pennsylvania, very close to it. And it's interesting because I feel like I'm going back and everything that I wanted to figure out about myself, I feel like I've done. I actually owe Madison a lot, I feel like. Moving here was probably the best decision of my life because the road I was on, staying in Lancaster, would have been really unhealthy for me. And it's funny because when I talk about that with my family, I know it upsets them because they don't really understand. But they're very excited about the prospect of me moving back to the area. And I'm very excited to be able to come back and be my own person. I think that my relationship with my family will be better for it. And I think that, I don't know, it was a good move. I'll be sad to leave, but it's also in a lot of ways, it's the right time to leave too, if I'm going to. So it's that whole full circle thing. So yeah.
I think that's a perfect way to end.
Great.
So Lori, thank you very much for your time. This concludes The Oral History with Lori Stuckervetz. Thanks again.